Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Sally O'Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. This program has been on, I guess, for a few years by now. The Mary and Sally show is probably where I should have been interviewing Mary Pullers Kavanaugh. You know, that would have made sense, wouldn't it? But anyway, welcome. She's not on the line yet, and but we are going to be talking about her new book. It's called The Book on Greatness. Well, I don't know where she's going to go with this, but I'll be honest with you. I've had her on last time from the CDC rally after it concluded, and the first one. And she made mention of something that really did kind of strike a chord with myself and with many people, and that is, who are the vaccinators to deny our children greatness? That was the essence of what she said, and that's absolutely true. She had said, well, they think it's okay for you to have a job in a fast food restaurant. You know, he or she is doing really well to accomplish that. And Mary's comment was, how dare they deny our children greatness? And right on, girl. All right, I'm going to pick her up right now. Hi, Mary.
Hey, how are you?
Well, I was just talking about your comment after the CDC rally regarding greatness and how dare the vaccinators deny our children greatness. I thought that was extremely important. A lot of people responded to that, and I'm wondering, is your book on greatness, does it refer to that?
Yeah, it definitely refers to that, and I believe it starts before you're born even, because it depends on, you know, what your mom is doing to prepare you in utero because of all the environmental issues that we now have to be worried about as we're making the womb for the baby. So I start with, you know, what you need to do to prepare before pregnancy, because we now know that there's so many different chemicals that they're finding even in the umbilical cord blood. I mean, they've proven that in research.
And this might even be among unvaccinated pregnant women. Like, for example, I interviewed a woman who served in the military, and her child, after receiving a clean bill of health, got one DTaP shot, and with it came cerebral palsy, severe brain damage, blindness, and four other severe reactions, and probably because of all the toxic buildup she had received as a military person from the vaccination.
Right, and epigenetics is definitely in play here, which means that what's going on with the familial genes is being passed on. So it's all part of the equation.
Right. And the first child, they say, is the most toxic, simply because that child has absorbed the most toxicity from the mother, if the mother is toxic.
Yeah, that makes sense. But then also what we have seen is the increase in the vaccinations, too. So a lot of times we see the youngest child being the most affected, because when you look at the vaccines that were, like, say, in the 60s, and then you look at the ones that are now, I mean, it's like tripled or quadrupled the number of vaccines that are going into these children.
Well, you're saying that the mother is passing on the injuries to the children. I do know one instance of this regarding the anthrax vaccine, in fact, to the grandchildren. But could you talk about that more, if you would?
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of insults going on in regard to what's happened previously, because, like, they started with the vaccines, like, in the 1930s. So, but I feel like what my mom passed on to me, I mean, I think she did pass some things on, but it's not to the point where it was detrimental, except for that polio vaccine, because I did get the polio vaccine, and I myself have had a problem with comprehension, so I had to go to school, to, you know, summer school, because I had comprehension issues. So that tells me that, you know, there was some type of a disconnect going on there. And then also, I had the vision processing issue was a problem for me, because I actually had to go to a optometrist. I remember riding my bike and sitting in front of this machine and then working and exercising my eyes and trying to get the images to come together. So I had that issue as well. But, you know, when you look at my vaccination record...
Is that double vision, Mary? Is that double vision that you're experiencing?
It's more like convergence insufficiency and having to do with tracking and teaming. So it's the functional, the eyes, the way they function in a physical way. So you have to think of how they're tracking and how they're teaming and how they're focusing. So, you know, you could have perfect eyesight and still have this problem. And the thing that just baffles me is I don't understand why they're not testing for this in the schools, because they're not. And what they're doing is with these children that are struggling with reading, because you do struggle with reading, if you're, instead of reading like every word across the page, you know, in a succinct line, you're skipping words in your sentences. So you can definitely understand why you're not comprehending what you're reading. Or you could be doing it up and down, so you could be reading horizontally instead of vertically. And you also see kids that just put their eyes very, very close to the paper. I mean, they almost have their head down on the desk. So, you know, it's just very inverted vision, but it's a functional problem that you can fix. But what I've seen is there's very few optometrists that handle this. And I believe the reason why they haven't handled it is because insurance doesn't pay for it. So they're not making any money to bring out that problem, and so they don't spend money to learn about that problem to help those patients. So when you go to the eye doctor and it's a regular optometrist, they are not going to have the background to check to see whether you have a visual whether your child has a visual processing disorder. And if your child has problems reading in school, then I would definitely rule that out. And there are doctors, you can go on, it's COVD, so it's collegeofvisiondevelopment.org, and you can find a doctor who specializes in that. But I think it's almost criminal that they don't screen for it in the elementary level. Once you see the kids struggling, you need to screen for that. I'm not saying the school has to, you know, pay for the therapy. That's not what I'm saying. But at least alert the parents that this is a problem. And it can just, if you get on top of this problem, you could soar through school. But if you never get on top of this problem, you may not be able to go to college. You may not be able to finish high school. That's how important this problem is.
Well, I know dyslexia is certainly a problem that keeps completely intelligent people from excelling. And they don't know they have it until, you know, they don't understand until, I guess, a certain age what the problem is, or they have to be tested for it, and they are miscategorized. But there's another problem that Kathleen brought to my attention in terms of her autistic son, that he was seeing things in 2D, not in 3D. So he was seeing, like, instead of something in three dimensions, he was seeing things layered in two dimensions in front of him. So
right.
He got at the Autism One conference to look through a lens that showed her what her son was seeing out from an optometrist there. There's so many different ways. My daughter had double vision, And she gets that whenever she's stressed. She gets double vision. And this is supposedly another common outcome from vaccination.
Right. And I think, I mean, I wonder if that also has to do with, you know, the shrinkage of the synapses, because those are your connections. And so you wonder whether, you know, that is causing it. Because there's this one website that I just, I mean, when I found it, I was like, oh, my gosh. Because we see a lot of disorganization in the brain. And there's this one website which does a beautiful job explaining it, and it talks about the midbrain, and it talks about the pons, and it talks about the cortex. And you've actually got kids that are saying, I have to move or my brain doesn't work. And as teachers, as soon as we see kids moving around, what do we say? We say, stop moving around. But they're moving around because they have to, because their brain isn't working unless they move. And so that's why you've got these kids tapping on the pencil, you know, tapping on the desk with their pencil. You've got kids rocking in chairs. You know, they're moving for a reason.
So,
isn't
it? Their brain goes to sleep, or it freezes, or something that they have to physically adjust themselves or tap, as you say, and wake themselves up so they can be alert and absorb information. Wow.
Yeah, actually. And also some kids, if they're sitting, just because of the way the proprioception is in their desk, their chair that they're sitting in actually feels slippery. And so they'll actually fall out of their chair. That's you see that with kids. They fall out of their chair, and, of course, all the kids laugh at them. But it's like they can't help it. I mean, that is, you know, they've got an imbalance there. And the beauty of all this is, because the more I study autism, the more I understand that movement is key to recovery in autism. Because what's happened is with the damage from the vaccines or from the toxic insult, is you become developmentally delayed. When you're developmentally delayed, you have reflexes that by the age of 3 should have been retired, and they're not retired. So they just keep going, and that's when you get all the disorganization in the brain.
Okay, now stimming. Stimming is often repeated motion, right?
Yeah.
It takes so many different forms. I hesitate to say what form it would take, but that's possibly a way of keeping their minds alert. I had never thought of that.
Yeah, exactly. And also the way it was really interesting, I found this how did I find that? Oh, I think it was a post. Somebody had posted, they had asked the kids with, you know, quote, autism, why you cannot give me eye contact? What is wrong with your eye contact? Like, why can you not have eye contact? And it was so interesting, the answers that they gave, and I covered that in my book. But,
Tell us. I really want the answer to that.
Well, I mean, these are like just answers that the kids gave, you know. But
I'm interested.
A lot of it is, it's like they almost can't think what they're saying to you and look at you at the same time. They both take different processing abilities, and they can't do it at the same time. Now, one of them actually said it was painful to look in someone's eyes. So I thought, wow, that is interesting. And one person said it just feels yucky. You know, it's like, and then one person said, well, I've learned just to look at the eyebrows. I don't look at the eyes, and those people can't tell, you know. So, yeah, isn't that fascinating? I was like, wow.
Three completely different answers, I might add.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very individualized.
Well, the first one I can actually relate to myself. When I'm, you know, thinking in terms of responding to someone, sometimes I look up and, you know, sometimes I look not directly at them, in terms of, you know, like I'm thinking. So I get that. I get the first answer. The second two are very interesting. Perhaps they are perceiving the soul of the person, the second one. Second answer, where they don't want to look,
well, yeah,
in the eyes is yucky.
Them, yeah, and one of them did say that. They said they couldn't look at the person because it was almost like they were staring into their soul. It was too intense for them to look. Isn't that
wow.
Amazing? I was like, wow. Yeah. I mean, that's just incredible.
Well, they say the eyes are the
windows of the
soul.
They say that,
window.
Right? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Exactly. And then one of them said, apparently when he looks in the eyes, he had the perception that he pictured everything that he saw. So he would continue to see pictures of the eyes the whole time, multiple pictures. And that was very distracting if he had to carry on a conversation.
Well, it kind of sounds like they have limitations and exceptional ability. You know, it
right.
sounds like
yeah.
it's a double-edged
yeah.
sword.
But then when you look at, you know, the way society views someone, and I really do think bullying has a lot. I mean, I think that we are seeing bullying because of this. If you add the eye contact
issue, bullying?
And then you also add, well, I mean, kids like to be looked at when they're talked to. And if a kid's not looking, if your friend or your classmate isn't looking at you, you think that they're not paying attention to you. But that's not true at all. But that's what you perceive. But then in addition to that, a lot of these kids, they struggle with processing. So not only are they not looking at you, but they most likely will not be able to follow the conversation at the rate you're speaking to them. And once again, that, you know, they're going to think, well, they're slow. And yeah, they're slow. That's exactly right. They're slow. But does it mean that they're not understanding what you're saying? No, it doesn't.
Did you call that bullying? Is that what you called it?
Well, what I was saying was I think that that's why we are seeing bullying today. That is some of the reason. Because these kids are looked at as odd kids. And the kids that are odd are the ones that get picked on. Now, we are seeing also a lot of kids that understand what's going on, and maybe it's because they have siblings at home, and they're protecting these kids. I mean, they're surrounding these kids from the bullies. So we're seeing that as well.
Well, it's kind of ironic because I just said to my husband for the millionth time the other day, when he said, I'm listening to you, I said, don't listen to me, just look at me. Because that way I know I have his attention. And he actually is listening to me. But you're saying the polar opposite. When they're not looking, they're more likely listening. It's just kind of ironic.
We can't assume that just because someone isn't looking at you that they're not interested. We can't assume that. Because if they have the eye contact issue, then you can't say, well, you know, I mean, the reason they're not looking at you is because they can't process what they're thinking and having a conversation with you if they look at you, because they can't do the two things at one time. But that doesn't mean that they're not interested in what you have to say.
My sister only looked at me directly once. I remember it as clear as day because I remember looking into her eyes and thinking, I don't think anything's going on up there. It's like I could see right out the back of her head. It really seemed like zero was going on. She was severely mentally retarded and, you know, I know that she had reflexes certainly and she had, she took actions which made zero sense to the rest of the family. But actions I'm assuming she had decided to take, you know, but only once did we look directly into one another's eyes.
Wow, that's painful, really, you know, because Because when you think about it, I mean, that's not something that we should lose. Because that is, I mean, that's how we see into people's souls. We tell a lot by looking at people's eyes. So by taking that away from us, it's criminal. And my daughter, when she got her TD vaccine, my oldest daughter in middle school, she lost some of her eye contact. So, you know, we have to keep our greatness. And I think we're great the way we are. We don't need poisons put in our body.
Well, you certainly are going to get a standing ovation from me. Bravo! Yes, indeed, bravo! how many chapters do you have in your book, and what are they named, if you don't mind? It'll kind of give an overview of the book.
Okay, let me see if I have that here. Just a second.
The book is called.
Okay, so my first.
Give the title, and then we'll talk about the chapter.
Okay, the title is The Book on Greatness, and it is How to Keep Shining Your Light. And the first chapter is actually just a background of kind of all the chapters that I'm going to cover. And it's my journey, really. It's my journey of autism, but it's more than that. It's my journey of what happened to my father through the pharmaceutical drugs and through, let's see, how do I want to put it? I mean, the pharmaceutical drugs definitely hindered him. So, but just that whole process and just, you know, the fact that he lived in a retirement community and, you know, do retirement communities, are they really about wellness? You know, so, I mean, just watching what happened to him, you know, was, and at the same time, see, he also had a quote, brain injury. It was called cerebellum degeneration, or cerebellum ataxia. And we see ataxia in our autism kids. So I was seeing a lot of what was happening to him at the same time as what I saw with the low-functioning kids, because my father lost two boys.
Could you define ataxia, please?
Well, it's kind of a movement disorder, and he lost, like, his muscle, like, he no longer was able to stand up. I'm trying to think I believe the ataxia part is a movement disorder. I'm trying to think what that was. He also had trouble with swallowing. Uh-huh. So it relates to the reflexes as well. Because he lost problems with swallowing. And we do have, I mean, like my oldest daughter has never, she has swallowed like really, really tiny pills, but for some odd reason, and she couldn't do that until she was like in college. She couldn't swallow pills. So that's, you know, kind of a gag reflex issue. And we see that with some kids, you know. We see some kids that cannot swallow pills, which, you know, you're kind of limited sometimes in how they're going to be treated if they can't swallow pills.
Right.
So once again, you're being made less. But so my I just kind of overview what the whole book is going to be about. So that's the first chapter. The second chapter is what, how to prepare the body during preconception before you actually get pregnant, and then kind of all the way through preschool. So and I cover like the pregnancy. I cover what to look for in a pediatrician, or don't even think pediatrician, go with a chiropractor. Is it going to be a hospital birth? Is it going to be a birthing center? Is it going to be at home? And I pros and the cons. And I really believe that it's getting more and more dangerous to have your baby in the hospital. It's even more and more dangerous to just go to the hospital. So I cover that. I cover what well baby checkups really are. And then my third chapter is on once you go to school and the exemptions and how that, you know, what you can do in regard to that, because the schools are really lying to you because they say these immunizations are required and they are not required. And at least in the public school, they are not required unless you live in, there's a couple of states, Mississippi and West Virginia. And I also give the website for the National Vaccine Information Center so they can exactly find out which exemptions that their state allows. So I go through that. I talk about vision processing, which is what we did talk about. I talk about why we don't have cursive writing in the schools anymore, or in a lot of schools. And I believe,
would you mind telling me that? I'm interested to know why.
Well, I mean, I believe that the kids don't have the fine motor, the eye-hand coordination and the fine motor skills that they once had. And I think it was too difficult for the teachers to get them to hold their pencil even. You know, I mean, they just wouldn't take the time to do it because it took time to learn cursive. But what's so sad about it is that is a brain activity. That makes connections when you learn cursive. So they're shortchanging your development by taking cursive out of the schools.
I just saw a post about that today. I'm going to try to find it for you. But I thought that was interesting. You know, years from now, you can write and have younger people not knowing what you're saying because they won't be able to read cursive.
Well, and that's another thing I talk about. Yeah, well, another thing I talk about is, okay, because our documents, some of our documents, our historical documents, are written in cursive. Mm-hmm. So if you don't learn cursive, does that mean you're never going to read our historical documents? And then another thing, what if you want
to
read some letters?
That's the first thing that came to mind, was the United States Constitution was written in cursive.
Exactly. And also, what about your grandparents' letters? You know, I mean, that is family history. I mean, so you will not have the ability to read that? I mean, again, they're taking away, you know, part of you. They're taking away part of you by not
right.
teaching that. And then I remember that they spent an inordinate amount of time for me to how to learn to hold my pencil. Now, when I watch, and I didn't even cover this in my book, but when I watch these kids hold their pencil, it is almost painful. I mean, they apparently don't seem to care how they hold the pencil. But, I mean, they wrap it around, you know, kind of like a half circle, and they've got their hand almost at a 60-degree angle trying to write. I mean, it's horrific. I mean, I remember we had to have a certain way to do it, and everybody had to do it that way. And they don't do that anymore.
You work in the schools currently, Mary?
Yeah, I do. I work. I mostly substitute in middle school. I have lately also substituted in an elementary school. In fact, the elementary school that I'm subbing at right now has 12 special ed pre-K classes, 10 kids each.
Oh,
12? And they're not potty trained, a lot of them. They have special scissors that they use with springs because they don't have the strength to use a regular scissor. And they can't even jump, like on a trampoline. I mean, it's really depressing for me to go into that setting. I mean, I can't take it. You know, maybe I do it once a week or something, but they're having a lot of trouble finding substitutes to be in those classes. And you don't have to change their diapers if you're a substitute. So it's not that reason. But it's, you know, they can't even, like, draw a circle. They can't draw their letters. I mean, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
Oh my God, Mary.
And these kids are going to kindergarten next year.
I have to say that the American College of Pediatricians, who has come out in regard to early ovarian failure from the HPV, I'm so unimpressed by that. Because with all of the things these vaccines are causing, the only thing they care about is keeping their businesses afloat. No kids, no business. So sterility affects them. The only thing they're coming out and talking about is sterility because they won't have customers to inject. They're not talking about the thousand other issues that they should be talking about as responsible humans.
Yeah, I don't.
Literally professional.
I can't even get my head around where these pediatricians. In fact, the pediatrician that did the damage to my children actually specializes in allergies.
Well, well, well.
I would like to have a real. In fact, I have a letter in my head, and I have a mind to go and see him because it's horrendous. And you cannot tell me that these pediatricians are not noticing this. You cannot tell me that. I don't believe it.
Well, on the one hand, their business is soaring because everybody's returning to the scene of the crime for answers and solutions. And on the other hand, their business is going to drop off 1,000% when no more children are being born from all the polysorbate 80. So it's, you may have a field day today and just nobody tomorrow. And that's what you deserve. You've created this. I have...
I think there's a real movement. Yeah, and I think there's a real movement, at least in my tribe, in my community, and the mother warriors that are, you know, talking to the younger mothers. We're really suggesting to them, you know, okay, you're seriously going to go back to the pediatrician that harmed your child? Why would you do that? So what do these pediatricians really do? I mean, a chiropractor, in my mind, and they knew, I mean, if you talk to a chiropractor, they don't vaccinate their children, and they haven't vaccinated their children in years. So they knew, right? So why don't you just take your child to a chiropractor? I mean, they can, you know, help with the ear infection. They do much better with the ear infections, as a matter of fact, because that's a mechanical thing. And I was lied to because I was told, oh, she'll grow out of it. And my daughter was she had chronic ear infections, was on antibiotics from the time she was 9 months off and on until high school. And she was damaged by the one of her ears was damaged by the tubes, because she had two sets of tubes, to the point where she almost lost her hearing in that one ear, and she had to have a tympanoplasty. So even what they're doing in regard to ear infections is very harmful. So not only are they harming you to cause the ear infections, then they're even causing more harm with the treatment of the ear infections.
Right, exactly. And people have to kind of come to grips that with the fact that anything that's going to benefit your child will probably not be covered by your insurance. Your insurance is a complete waste of time.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But
which is why
in saying that, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying, well, this is why they're trying to shove insurance down everybody's throat, because it's useless. It's useless other than to suck you dry for money.
Right. Well, and in saying that, though, if you go, because I've gone to, like, an integrative doctor. Right now my daughter's going to a holistic pediatrician, and they actually have a concierge model, and so you pay a certain amount every month. Regardless of whether you go there or not. But the beauty of that is you at least have that, I have that solace, so to speak. Like if something, you know, if she gets really sick I can't handle something, and they handle everything. It's not just physical. They handle the brain issues too. What's going on a kind of mental health level, they handle that as well. Chiropractor issues, they handle that. So it's the whole gamut. So I just have that solace that, you know, if something isn't going right, I can take her there. And I just think that's a great thing, and especially with kids that have a high functioning autism, because very often they're depressed. And you really almost have to have an ongoing, like, counseling situation with them, just because they have to have somebody to talk to if they don't talk to you, because their social life is not the way it should be. And we're made as humans, we are made to be with other humans. And when that doesn't happen, and, you know, we can't get friends, it's very, very painful. And it's very easy. It's easier for our kids to go into a dark place. And actually, the kids, the Asperger kids, and my daughter's the pervasive developmental disorder. So those are high-functioning kids, but they have a high rate of suicide.
Well, nothing could surprise me less, because, the first thing they want to do is put you on psychotropic drugs if you are feeling depressed, which, of course, cause more depression. But you're suggesting that just from the vaccines, without the addition of drugs to deal with psychological problems, they are feeling suicidal just from the vaccine.
Oh, yeah. Because because they've got, you know, there's that gut-brain connection, and they've got gut issues. And when you've got gut issues, that's kind of like your second brain. So you've got that anxiety. In fact, I had a doctor, she's a Chinese medicine doctor, but she also is getting her MD. But she told me, she said, all these kids that haven't been treated. And my daughter, I started treating her really late, like 11 years old. And I haven't been able to do as much as I would like, just because once they get into that preteen, teen area, you know, they have their own mind. And you don't always have control of what you want to do. So it turns into anxiety and depression. That's what she told me. If they do not, treat the gut, it turns into
also heart palpitations are experienced as anxiety as well. Some of these children have heart palpitations, which leave them in a state of anxiety. But in fact, it's a physical thing that's happening to them. But how they experience it is anxiety. Let us get back, because I don't want you to have the time elapse and not cover all the chapters. I know I derailed you because I was interested in a particular issue.
Yeah.
Please keep going.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, so in the school part, that's like my extensive chapter, just because that's really where my heart is. But I also talk about what's going on in PE classes. And I remember when I was younger, I had this going on too. But you know how they pick the teams, and the children pick the teams. And then you see these kids, you know, and you watch their faces. And, of course, the kids that get picked the last, and I was a kid that always got picked the last. But, see, if you don't have good eye-hand coordination, you're going to be horrible at sports. So that's another reason to get on top of the vision processing disorder, if that's going on. And then the arts, a lot of these kids, if they're not good in, like, science and math, they're usually really good in the arts. And so that's when you have to find what your child's passion is, and then just embellish them in that passion. Just put them in those classes and let them find their worth in what they're good at.
Well, I have to take this moment to say something that I found totally remarkable when I heard it. Karen Johnson was saying that in that kind of famous movie from Australia, that Dr. Scheibner talks about autistic children being more artistic. Now, Candy Waters' Autism Artist would be a fine example of that, but she's kind of unique. But she was saying that the measles improves your artistic abilities. The measles.
Wow, that's
actually
so interesting.
Improve.
Wow.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting because we see, you know, what happens when the mercury crosses the brain-blood barrier, and we see the synapses shrinking. I mean, we've seen that scientifically I've seen it in a video of a pig. So a lot of these kids are either left, you know, we always hear left brain, right brain. Are you left brain? Are you right brain? But I really think the vaccines have something to do with that, and they're changing that. When maybe they shouldn't, you know, we should just be left alone and see how well we do. That's where I am with that. In the school part too, I cover what's happened to the boys. I cover behavior, and I cover the school, my vision of the school of the future. And then my fourth chapter is on, it's a lot has to do with cancer, medical school, big pharma, insurance, drugs, procedures, psychiatrists, hospital. I cover the history of ADHD, and I go into dentistry too, because dentistry is also part of the problem, because our teeth have meridians, and the meridians are actually connected to organs, our organs. So different teeth are related to different organs. So you really should pay attention, you know, when they, you know, take out your wisdom teeth or, you know, I mean, you need to, like, look at that a little bit. Like, is that really necessary? How's that going to affect the rest of my body? Because it's not just your teeth.
Really?
And Dr. Tennant taught me a lot
on that.
I thought
about mercury fillings or about those horrible things they do where they drill really far down. What are those called?
The root
canal. You know
canal.
What I'm talking about.
The
root
canal. Canals. Yeah, that's
right.
You don't want to get a root canal.
Sometimes they show you like your foot and how your foot, different areas on your foot affects different areas of your body, and you're saying different teeth in that same way affect different areas of your body. Wow.
Isn't it? Dr. Tennant. He when sometimes you read a book and it just kind of just changes your whole perspective. I mean, it's just like it changes your world. And his book, and I do refer to that in the book, in my book, but it's called Healing is Voltage, and he now has the third edition out. He's about in the 70s.